So today we're looking at Dhammapada verse 307, which reads as follows. Kasavakantha bahavo papa dhamma asanyata papa papehi kammehi nirayante upapajjare, which means many are those with the saffron robe around their neck of evil nature, untamed. They are evil by their evil deeds, and to hell they will go. The Buddha taught this verse in regards to a story involving Mahamoggallana. Mahamoggallana was one of the Buddha's chief disciples. He was exemplary in his ability to see and experience things outside of the realm of experience of others. His proficiency in what we would call supernatural powers. And the story goes that Moggallana would spend his time in meditation on the peak of Gijakuta, Vulture's Peak, outside of Rajagaha. And quite often when walking down the peak to the city to go for alms, he would walk with his assistant or his fellow monk, Lakkhana, and he would see things. He'd see ghosts or spirits. And so the story goes that he was walking down Gijakuta and smiled. And Lakkhana saw him smiling and asked him, "What are you smiling about?" Arahants smile not because they see things that are funny, but they smile at events that are surprising, extraordinary. It can be extraordinary suffering, extraordinary happiness, extraordinary greatness. They smile at that which is surprising, that which is extraordinary. And so he saw something extraordinary and he said, "Well, let's wait. It's not proper for me to talk about it now. Let's wait until we're in front of the Buddha." So they went for alms, ate their meal, and then went to see the Buddha. And Mahamoggallana related to the Buddha what he had seen. It seems that he would see these ghosts, but they weren't just ordinary ghosts. They were monks. So ghosts wearing wearing monastic robes, or ascetics' robes at least. But what was remarkable about these monks is that, well, they were floating around, flying around in these robes. They were wailing and screaming and on fire in great pain and suffering, which was, of course, an odd sight, not what you'd normally think of when you think of when you think of a monk, you know? Someone in monastic robes, you would think, would be rather experiencing bliss, peace, happiness, freedom. And so it was quite an extraordinary experience. And the Buddha said, "Yes, I saw these as well, but it's not the kind of thing you can just go around telling people. No one's going to believe you." So the Buddha said, "I wouldn't tell people unless I had a witness." So now that, same with Mahamoggallana, he wasn't just going to tell Lakkhana that he saw this thing that no one would believe. Wait until he can confirm it with the Buddha, have the Buddha confirm what he saw. So they're able to confirm it. And the Buddha explained what had happened here, why this actually occurs. He said, in the time of Kassapa Buddha, a Buddha in the past. It came to be what something that comes to be in every Buddhasasana inevitably. Buddhists, the followers of the Buddha, stop practicing his teachings and start engaging in evil deeds and just pretend to be monks or pretend to be following the Dhamma, but actually are engaged in all sorts of unwholesomeness. And as a result of that unwholesomeness, the monks' robes couldn't save them. They were born, as a result, were born in hell after they died. Even though they were ordained as monks, when they died, they went to hell and suffered great torture and great suffering. Them being born as ghosts is actually not the result, it's the residual effects. But what happens is, after you go to hell, the expiation that goes on in hell, or the working out of karma that goes on in hell, isn't complete. There's residual. So it doesn't mean you're scot-free, I finished your time in hell and now everything's fine again. That's not the way nature works, no. So being born as a ghost is the echo, the residual effects of the karma, the result of the karma of being probably engaging in a lot of killing and stealing and just deeds that are completely against the Buddhist code. And the Buddha said, don't mistake this. Don't make the mistake of thinking that this doesn't happen. And he taught this verse. He said, many are those who are wearing the Buddhist robes or ascetic robes, claiming to be religious people, but of evil nature, untamed, with their wild mind, a mind that is unable to follow, even when it knows what is right, when it knows what is good. And they're not good just because they're wearing the robes. They are evil, and the evil has it cannot be erased because of what they wear. Papa, papihi, kamihi. They are evil by their evil deeds. And no matter what they're wearing, they go to hell. So not a surprising teaching. I don't think anyone really thinks that just putting on monk's robes is going to save you, but it's easy to be lulled into a false sense of goodness when you see a monk or when you live as a monk, thinking that you're somehow safe. So from the story, what we have to talk about, I think most importantly, is the existence of ghost monks flying through the air with their robes on fire. Something that's obviously difficult for many people to believe. For devout Buddhists, it's not really a problem. People who grew up Buddhist or have followed the Buddhist teaching for some time have at the very least come to accept that out of respect and reverence for the Buddha and Buddhist teachers, we believe out of faith that these things must exist. But for the inquiring mind, or for anyone outside of Buddhism, you have to ask, how is this possible? It seems highly implausible when we relate it to our own experience. We have nothing to relate it to. Being a monk, wearing robes, no problem with that. Being a ghost, flying through the air with your body on fire, fire that doesn't ever go out, seems like something out of a fantasy. But the reality of it is that our existence as human beings is in no way more probable than any other existence. It just is, and we know it exists because we're experiencing it, and that's all. We don't have any memory or experience with any other type of existence. And the thing about being human is, as far as we understand, it's pretty average. Being born a human cannot come about from great evil. Killing and stealing will not get you born as a human being. But likewise, will doing great good not lead you to be reborn a human being? If you're a kind and generous and selfless person, that also is not conducive to being reborn as a human being. You're more likely to be born in heaven, obviously. And we can see this in our practice of meditation, but also of goodness and Buddhism in general. We start to notice the patterns that a person who is who is engaged in great amounts of evil, becomes sick, becomes unable to even live as a human being. Their body becomes inflamed with desire and aversion and anger and hatred. They become reckless, they hurt themselves, they fail to take care of themselves. And they seem to be completely at odds with their human form, physically and mentally. We can see it with people who do great good. People who are kind and generous and selfless are obviously often taken advantage of, have a difficult time doing the things that are necessary to survive in cutthroat society where it's dog-eat-dog and everyone's out for their own selfish desires. We can also see how evil and good change us. We can see the important aspect of this is how evil qualities and good qualities change you as a person and lead you in a certain direction. Humans tend to be fairly average. Most people that we know are some good, some bad. It's hard to find people that are extremely evil. They exist, but they're rare. And likewise, it's difficult to find people who are very, very good. The average person is somewhere in the middle, some good, some bad. But when you see the results of good deeds, you notice that it changes you, that a person who is engaged in spiritual and Buddhist practice becomes something very different from what they were before, becomes dedicated to the five precepts, dedicated to ethics, dedicated to kindness and goodness in a way that is quite extraordinary. And likewise, we notice how our evil qualities change us, affect us, that you can't get away scot-free, that there is results. So the idea of being reborn as a ghost or in hell or as an angel is internally consistent with what we're observing here and now, that our good qualities lead to good results, our bad qualities lead to bad results. It's not a stretch for a Buddhist to believe that these effects persist, that death isn't something magical that suddenly stops, that cause and effect chain, that if you persist in extreme actions of great evil or great good, you're not going to come back to this very middling state of being a human being. Our problem is that we take the human existence as being something more than it is, something more real than it is. The human existence isn't even, you know, human beings don't exist. Being a human being is just a concept we have. The reality is, well, look, close your eyes and look and see what's happening. Observe what's happening. You'll notice there's no human. There's experiences of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling and thinking. And these change very much dependent on the qualities of your mind. We just happen to be in a fairly heavily contrived state that prevents great extremes of suffering and great extremes of pleasure. We're locked into this sort of a prison. But the prison isn't real. Being a human isn't real. It's just the contrived state that we find ourselves in now that is no different from any other state. Why we can't experience these things, why we can't all see ghosts all around us or angels or demons, I don't have an answer for the physics or the scientific reason why that is, except to say that it's because it's nothing like us. These beings are very, very dissimilar to what we are. Their state is so far removed in some extremity that it has nothing to do with the reality that we find ourselves in now. But anyway, it's not necessary for you to understand, to believe that ghosts exist or angels exist. We're not concerned with the precise existence of this or that, but we appreciate the examples of what is possible. That if I head in this direction, extreme suffering is possible. If I head in the good direction, great happiness is possible. The other thing to learn about the story, though, something that is even more interesting, or equally interesting, is that karma is not the be-all, end-all. What this story reminds us of is that karma tends to have a cyclical nature. The karmic law is that good leads to good. Do good deeds, good results come from it. That's a law. That is something that will never change, cannot be interfered with. There's no getting away from that. And likewise, evil leads to bad. Evil leads to suffering. You can't get away from that. You can't say for certain what the result will be, but you can say what type of result will come. Evil leads to bad. Good leads to good. That's a law. But there's something also important, almost as important, and that is the karmic trend. That when an ordinary person with no higher understanding of impermanent suffering and non-self receives the good results of their good deeds, they tend to become negligent. People who receive the results of good deeds tend to lose all interest or keenness for doing good deeds. It tends to eventually happen. Good people get good results, and people who get good results often become terrible people. They become intoxicated with the pleasure that they get as a result of their good deeds. They become selfish. They become possessive, worrying and noticing any slight loss, magnified much greater than someone who doesn't have a lot of good things. And they stress and they worry and just get consumed by all of their goodness. This is why you can see how many rich people are there in the world who are just terrible, terrible individuals. Not to mention human beings who have, you know, great potential for power, who take advantage of that potential to cling and to seize as much power, as much influence, as much wealth as they can. You know, really pulling to the limits the potential that they have, basically burning up all the fuel that they might have saved. It's like using up your bank account, the bank account of good results of your karma. And so inevitably what usually happens is good people turn bad and end up turning into bad people and getting bad results. This is what you see with Buddhists, even Buddhist monks in this case. Why can it happen with a Buddhist monk? Is because, well, being a Buddhist monk is a privileged state. You're free from so much of the stress and suffering of the worldly life. It's easy to become negligent as a result of that. And if you don't appreciate the precious opportunity you have, it's very easy to become negligent, or it's certainly possible to become negligent. And of course, the opposite is true. When people who engage in evil deeds receive the consequences of their evil deeds, the trend is for them to eventually appreciate the need to be good people. And this is why you see people who suffer a lot tend to come out on top in terms of ethics, in terms of goodness, appreciating the terrible nature of suffering such that they don't have any desire to inflict it on others, and appreciating the weighty nature of evil. So eventually evil people become good. There's a cyclical nature to it, and for ordinary people this is what you see. No one is evil, evil, evil for all of eternity. There's a trend to go in this cycle. And why that's important for us is, again, because we can become complacent. When we get the results of good deed, you can notice this in others. It's hard to bring those who are experiencing good results to appreciate the importance of practicing meditation, of practicing goodness, of doing good deeds. So as Buddhists, it's important for us to remember, even being born Buddhist, you see a lot of people who have the good fortune to be born Buddhists and not taking advantage of it, becoming complacent, having the idea that somehow they are enough. So this reminder of the cyclical nature of good and bad deeds, it's important for us to break out of that cycle as well. As for the verse, well, the simple lesson of the verse is the emphasis on this idea that goodness doesn't come from your station. It obviously doesn't come from what robes you wear, but it doesn't come from your station. It doesn't come because you're a Buddhist monk doesn't come because you're a meditator. It doesn't come because you're a Buddhist. It comes from the acts that you do. Papa, papi, hikamihi. If you're a Buddhist, you claim to be a Buddhist, you've set yourself up as a Buddhist, but you engage in evil deeds, you're evil because of those evil deeds, and being a Buddhist won't save you. Likewise with a monk, being a monk won't save you. You're not good because you're a monk, you're evil if you do evil deeds. And this has two implications for us. The first is that obviously we as monks should not be complacent. We as meditators should not be complacent. I mean, calling yourself, being a meditator is of course generally enough, because being a meditator means doing the acts. But simply feeling like, having the sense that you have undertaken meditation in the past, or that you have made a determination to practice meditation, or even that you do walking and sitting, isn't yet enough. The question is, during your walking, is there actions that you are taking in that period to see clearly, to gain clarity, to purify your mind, to free yourself from delusion? During the walking, when you do the sitting, is your mind in the present, here and now, facing and observing and becoming familiar with reality? Don't be complacent because of your label. And of course, as Buddhists, it's kind of low-hanging fruit to pick on people who are born Buddhist, because just like people who are born Christian or any religion, it doesn't mean that they actually practice anything in particular. But we can see how it's easy to become complacent when you're told that Buddhism teaches the path to heaven and the path to freedom from suffering, the path to enlightenment. It's easy to fall into the narrative, the idea that somehow as a Buddhist you're safe. But being a Buddhist won't save you. You're evil if you do evil deeds, and you will go to hell. But the other implication, just in passing, I guess, not quite as important, but still important to remember, because it's easy to become beguiled by a person in a robe. We can often be too respectful or reverential towards those wearing Buddhist monastic robes, or towards those wearing white robes. It's important to remember that just because someone is a monk, don't be shocked if they have evil deeds. There's two aspects of this. One is, don't take someone as an authority just because of the robes that they are wearing, just because their position is teacher. You really shouldn't take anything on authority. Even the Buddha's words, you should take them as instructions to be put into practice and experienced for yourself, verified for yourself. But the other aspect of it is to not be too overly critical, to not expect monks to be perfect. Obviously, monks are going to fail, and one thing that you see is a monk who is struggling will often quit because they're not perfect. We see monks disrobing because they feel like they're unable to be perfect as monks, that they're breaking rules and so on. But the Buddhist monastic code involves expiation of most unwholesome deeds that one could perform. As long as you haven't done something like kill a human being or stole something from someone, there is some sort of expiation and rehabilitation that can go on. And this goes for meditators as well. If you're as a meditator, don't be too discouraged if you're failing or you're not perfect or you've done bad deeds, maybe you've broken even the five precepts. The greatness of Buddhism is that there is no eternal damnation. There is no eternal heaven, but there is no eternal damnation. Karma is cyclical, and all that happens when we do bad deeds is we get bad results. Don't be discouraged if you're experiencing such great bad results that you think it's hopeless. One of the most important aspects of Buddhist practice is to rise above good and bad results, rise above the happy feelings and don't get attached to them, but also to rise above the painful, suffering feelings that come as a result of having done lots of bad deeds. Rather than be discouraged, take it as an opportunity to change, to learn to react in the new way, rather than reacting negatively to suffering, positively to happiness. Learn to be independent and rise above it. The other important thing about the verse, that it just incidentally, the Buddha mentions this word asanyata, asanyato, which means untamed or unrestrained or something like that. In the Buddhist context, it refers to the idea of a person whose mind is wild and without any training, you know, devoid of any kind of work having been done to train and to direct and to focus in a way that is to one's benefit. And this reminds us that evil deeds are not something that one simply decides to do or decides not to do. Becoming a good person isn't just saying, I'm not going to do evil, I'm not going to engage in unwholesome deeds. Every moment of our lives, we have the potential to do unwholesome deeds. And the reason why we do them is not because we choose to. That's not the main reason. The main reason is because our minds are untamed. We have no choice. We have no alternative. Because of the untamed nature of our minds are buffeted by the winds of our habits. Sometimes good, sometimes evil, with no real rhyme or reason for why we do things, why we prefer certain things and are averse to certain experiences. Our minds are just chaotic, wild, untamed. And this reminds us why we're practicing mindfulness and why mindfulness is really the crux of our path to freedom from suffering. Because as we come to see clearly the causes, the things that we, the experiences that trigger us to greed or anger or delusion, as we see them more clearly, our mind becomes focused, our mind becomes organized, our mind becomes tamed. The wisdom that we gain, the familiarity, the awareness, the knowledge that we gain about the difference between evil and good changes us. It tames us, it quiets the mind, it creates restraint. Restraint doesn't come from trying to control or force the mind not to get angry, not to be greedy. Restraint comes from wisdom. It comes from seeing clearly. It comes from the result of being tamed. We tame our minds. Ye jittang sanyame santi mokhanti marabandana. One who tames their mind will become free from the bonds of mara, the bonds of evil. So the lessons, the simple lessons that we get from the story and the verse, I think, especially as Buddhist meditators, is first to remember the law and the cycle of karma. Remember that on the one hand, it's important that we engage in good deeds and abstain from evil deeds. But on the other hand, it's important we understand the nature of them, and the limitations of them, that good deeds are not going to save you from the potential to suffer or the potential to be evil. And evil deeds are not the be-all, end-all doom that we might think they are either. Feeling discouraged that maybe you're too evil, you're not good enough to practice meditation, is never going to be accurate. It's never going to be helpful or conducive to anything good. It's not a proper way not a proper conclusion to come to. We should think again, rather, that the suffering that we're experiencing now may be the cause of evil in the past, but it's now giving us a chance to change. It's giving us a chance to appreciate the need to be a good person. And the good that we're experiencing now is a great opportunity for us to likewise let go of our greed, let go of our attachment. It's giving us a great opportunity and the freedom to practice further. To understand that cause and effect is very real, and if we don't tame our minds, if we don't purify our minds, it's much more consequential than just suffering in this life. We too could be born as ghosts flying through the air with our clothes on fire. And the other, I think, important lesson relates to this idea of sunyata. That yes, we are evil by our evil deeds, but more important than not doing evil deeds is to tame the mind and to train the mind so that there's no potential desire. There's no desire which has the potential to cause us to do evil deeds. When we train our minds to be objective, to face experiences without greed, without anger, without partiality, to be independent of our circumstances, not needing things to be a certain way, or needing things not to be a certain way. Once we cultivate mindfulness and are able to be present in the here and now and see things as they are, we free ourselves from hell, we free ourselves from suffering. We see it, free ourselves from the cycle of karma, the cycle of rebirth, the cycle of samsara. So don't be complacent just because you're a monk or a Buddhist. And remember that evil deeds lead to evil results, and an untamed mind is the prime reason why we can't escape potential to do evil in the future. So, much appreciation for everyone who undertakes the practice of mindfulness to tame their minds and to train themselves and free themselves from evil, unwholesome intentions that will hurt them and hurt other people. So that's the Dhammapada for today. Thank you all for listening.